On episode 638 of the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast, we meet Danielle Forrest and discuss her book, Own Your Wellness, giving you the tools to break through your health plateaus. You can find the full show notes for this episode at 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/638. Have you decided you're ready to make a change? To reclaim your health and fitness, the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast is here for you. Each week, we dive deep into health and fitness topics that affect those of us over 40. I'm Coach Allen. I'm an NASM certified personal trainer with specializations in corrective exercise, behavior change, performance enhancement, and fitness nutrition. A precision nutrition level 1 coach, a FAI certified functional aging specialist, and an OTA level 2 online trainer. Each week, I'm joined by our co-host, Coach Rachel. She is an NASM certified personal trainer and a RRCA level 1 run coach. Let us be your coaches as you find your way on your health and fitness journey. All right, let's go. Hey, Raz, how are you?
Good, Alan. How are you today?
Doing all right. In a hotel room on my way to Mexico for a retreat. Doing good.
Good.
Like I said, I made sure this trip was as easy on me as it can be. So, you know, travel for a day, rest for a day, travel for a day kind of thing. I'll make my way north and get that done and then make my way south.
That sounds good.
Yeah. How are things up there?
Good. Pretty quiet. I'm still recovering from my eye surgery. I still have restrictions for another couple days. So I've just kind of been tooling around the house, doing some light chores and just kind of waiting for my eye to heal.
So no kung fu fighting for you.
No, not for me. But you know, yesterday I watched my step count. My watch shows me a pedometer reading on the face of the watch. And yesterday I got to over 3,000 steps in the day, and I can't tell you how happy I was because I am really limited. So it's nice to see it, just even that tiny little bit of progress. So every step help counts.
All right. Well, you ready to have a conversation with Danielle?
Sure.
Our guest today is a functional diagnostic nutrition practitioner, a whole health educator from the National Institute of Whole Health, and an NASM certified personal trainer with specialties in corrective exercise and performance enhancement. She helps clients navigate conflicting and ever-changing advice and distill it into actionable personalized plans. Having worked as a personal trainer and health coach in Silicon Valley for over 20 years, she has helped people of all ages, disease states, and states of mind with one common thread. We are dynamic and constantly evolving creatures, and so should be our strategies to achieve wellness. Her own health struggles, including disordered eating, osteoporosis, and autoimmune disease, powerfully motivate her to continue learning. Her challenges only fuel her drive to find new ways to grow and thrive. With no further ado, here's Danielle Forrest. Daniela, welcome to 40 Plus Fitness.
Thank you for having me.
So your book is called Own Your Wellness, giving you the tools to break through your health plateaus. And what I really liked about this was that I think so many things that are out there are a weight loss. You know, lose weight, lose weight, lose weight. And I've always been a big proponent that weight loss is really just a side effect of doing everything else right.
That's exactly right.
And so I really like, and you know, you rightfully know as well that my book was called The Wellness Roadmap, is because again, if we start from a place of looking for wellness, we tend to end up where we want to be in every other facet of our life.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really, I think one of the important things I try to impart to the reader is that it's not just about setting a goal, you know, to lose 5 pounds or whatever. It's about, why do you want to reach that goal? Like, how is that going to feel in your body? What is that going to allow you to do that you couldn't do before? you know, and if you can tie an emotionally charged, important reason to that goal, your chances of success are so much greater.
Yeah. No one gets excited about losing 25 pounds. I mean, you step on the scale.
It's not,
great.
There's
great.
Nothing exciting that's about
the,
that at all.
That's the greatest accomplishment of my life. No, that's not how we actually look at it. What we look at is say, well, what was I able to do having lost that? I got off of my blood pressure medication. I was able to get on the floor and play with my grandchild for the first time.
I'm no longer pre-diabetic. I'm no longer worried about not being here for my family in 10 years, you know?
Exactly.
You know, all of those things are really important. One, and it's not to say that, like, we all want to look better in our clothes. So we all want to look in the mirror and go, I like what I see, you know, that's great. I think that's an important goal to have, but you have to tie that to a bigger purpose, because there's going to be so many days where you don't want to go train. You don't want to eat healthy. You're just sick of it. And it's easier to just give up when it's not tethered to something tangible and important to you.
Yeah. But all of that, again, is a function of being well. So when you're looking in the mirror, you're not just seeing the shape of your face. What you're seeing is that your skin looks alive, that your eyes look good, that you have an energy about yourself, a vibrance about yourself. That's what you see. You can say my face looks a little thinner, but in the end, that's not what we're after. In the end, we want to look and feel great.
And, you know, that's a hard one for a lot of people. Like, I would say for the majority of human beings, it's really hard to look at yourself in the mirror and say something nice and actually mean it. You know, one of the most amazing lessons I've learned from my husband, who's an interesting beast, is the way he sees himself in the mirror. You know, like when I first met him, he needed to lose about 75 pounds. He was my client. And, you know, he was saying, even back then, you know, I'd look in the mirror and I go, yeah, I need to lose some weight. I could be healthier, but I still love myself. I am on the same team as my body. We are one. And what an amazing, like, I don't know any woman in the world who's ever been able to go, we're on the same team. Yeah, we could be better. You know, like, it was very illuminating to me that there's so much negative self-talk for most people, and something that maybe we don't address necessarily head on.
Yeah. Well, the words we use, it's like, okay, so your best friend wanted to lose some weight and she ate a donut. Are you going to say those words to her? No, you're not.
Right.
You know,
right. You know,
never,
like,
say that.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's like if somebody's clothes are a little bit rumpled that day, you're not judging them immediately. If you notice their belly's a little bit bigger than the last time you saw them, you know, it doesn't change how you feel about that person. They're still your friend or your family member, whatever, you love them. But it sure seems to affect how we feel about ourselves.
Yeah. So that is a big part of it. That's that one of the inputs into our body that tells our body whether it's safe and can lose the weight or whether it's dangerous and there's something wrong. We're our mental game, how we talk to ourselves, is a huge, huge part of that.
It is absolutely huge. And I would say, you know, I help a lot of people work through all the different aspects of wellness to try to uncover why our body is not ready to let go of those extra pounds. You know, it is a protective mechanism. And until you address some underlying emotional aspects of this, yes, inflammation is a problem. Yes, bad diet, not sleeping, stress management. Of course, all those things matter. But if you're not addressing how you actually feel about yourself, and if you're telling yourself that life is good and I'm okay, those pounds are going to stay with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So now, when you say own your wellness, I think we've already kind of jumped into this a little bit, because, you know, it really is about sitting back and saying, what do I need? What is this beautiful, wonderful body that I have? what does it need to be well? So you want to take that concept a little bit deeper when you say own your wellness, what you mean and how we can go about that?
Well, I'm trying very hard with this book to impart to the reader what I get to do one-on-one with my client. And that generally revolves around taking this bombardment, like you said, you know, your best friend got this result or whatever, this bombardment of health information out there. I mean, since I was a kid, like now it's every day I get a message from somebody, hey, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? The new diet, the new pill, the new whatever it is. And how do you take all that information out there, decide A, if it's even worth your time to look into it? Does it support your goal at all? And then how, if you think it might, how can you strategically, scientifically add it to the mix into your wellness regimen to help you get to where you're trying to go? And it's hard. It's hard. So I tried through this book to give people a blueprint, a choose your own adventure of, you know, like I teach them about nutrition, I teach them about movement, I teach them about testing and supplements. But every once in a while, you take a break from reading and there's a chart right there. So you can say, hey, here's what's going on in my life. I'm going to take these pieces of information that I just learned about, and I'm going to try these couple things, right? So I constantly want people to just stop reading and think about how does this apply to me?
Yeah, it's basically you've got the information. You can make a hypothesis. I think this is the right thing for me. Mm-hmm. And then you can test it where your sample size is one. And it's the most important sample size, because if you get it right, you've just solved a big puzzle for yourself.
Absolutely. And the other thing I try to slow people down on is, you know, the people I work with are very, very smart. I mean, they're very well educated. I'm in the middle of Silicon Valley. I'm just surrounded by the brain trust here, you know. Sometimes people know too much for their own good and they want to try all the things. Right? Like they're on the new diet, they're trying the new workout, they're trying these new, you know, anti-aging supplements, you know, they're doing the new hyperbaric chamber, like whatever it is, they're doing all of it at the same time. And they've no idea which of those things is working, which is not. So instead of just throwing everything but the kitchen sink at it, let's pick one, see how that goes. Great. Awesome. It's either working or it's not. Then we go to the next thing and we layer in the next thing. So that way, when things stop working, you can peel back a layer and reassess, do some course correction.
Yeah. And the other side is we change as we age. Things change for us. So something that was working for you when you were in your 30s, it might not be working very well for you when you're in your 50s. And you have to rethink that, recalibrate.
Right. Yeah, redo. Absolutely. Constant change is a big theme in the book.
Yeah.
I put a little picture in there of my tattoo on the back of my neck, which is stands for constant change. And that's because we're just these dynamic evolving creatures. And I think as we get older, I mean, most of the people I work with are in their mid 40s up and through their mid to late 60s, early 70s. And quite a few of us, sometimes myself included, are fighting against those changes that are happening, you know? Instead of embracing them and saying, okay, what are my new goals? Like, I don't want to be the same person I was 20 years. I really don't. So how can I evolve what I'm shooting for and how I'm doing that to be new and more effective? I mean, I can't do the 5 hours of cardio a week I was doing in my 20s. I don't have time for that. Nor was it helping me, you know? It was like not helping me at all, you know?
Yeah.
If I do an hour cumulative of cardio in a week, that's a lot right now because it's just not working for me. And that might be different 5 years from now. You know, I don't know.
Yeah. So now you brought up something in the book that I think will actually surprise a lot of people to hear. But you said obesity is a disease of undernourishment.
Yeah, it's a little counterintuitive, but the reality is our modern food supply is nothing like humans were evolved to consume. And it is so nutritionally defunct. There are so little vitamins, minerals, amino acids, fatty acids, all of the wonderful things that nature intended for us to have. And nature also wrapped those nutrients into delicious packages so that we would know, okay, sweetness means I'm getting a good hit of maybe some minerals from honey, or I'm getting antioxidants from berries, right? So we've evolved to think that if it tastes good, it must be good for us. I mean, whether that matches our modern society or not. And so, you know, you go and drink a Slurpee that tastes as sweet as humans have ever tasted in their lives, in our entire history, and you're promising your body, hey, I'm giving you all of these antioxidants and minerals and all these wonderful things that come with sweet things in this world. Except by the time it hits your system, there's none of that stuff in there. And so you're left hungry for more and more and more, because your body still wants those nutrients.
Yeah, and it's saying more, but we're reading more to have a second Slurpee or chase it down with a chocolate bar instead, because even that's what they tell us in the commercial. If you're feeling a little cranky, a little angry, you need a candy bar.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, the protein bars and all those things are, well, sometimes they're just as bad as a candy bar. So, you know, getting people to stop eating processed food, even healthy processed food, organic, gluten-free, it doesn't matter. It's still junk food. I don't care how you slice it, because your body just does not register the satiety the same way as it would if you had a steak or a cup of broccoli, or, you know, like it's night and day, the results that you're going to get.
Yeah. Now there's a word, and I think a lot of people are just terrified of this word, or at least the feeling that this word is, and it's called hunger. And I think people are really afraid of hunger.
I agree.
And they're afraid because they've seen the results of being over hungry and then the binging and overeating that happens afterwards.
Yes.
And they're not really paying attention to what hunger, when it turns off. And as a result, they're overeating, and then yes, hunger turns off, but they feel terrible. And then hunger is going to turn right back on. And so we're not really listening to it. We're afraid of it. Like, don't let yourself get over hungry. It's a diet mantra that's been out there. Like, have 6 meals a day, because you don't ever want to be hungry.
I mean, I remember the night in like the early 90s, and that's, or the late 80s, early 90s, right? That's, everything was like, you gotta feed your body like it's a furnace, you know, and you gotta stoke it every 2 to 3 hours. We're nothing like furnaces. Like, we're not combustion engines. Like, we're gonna be okay. But you know, those of us who are in mid age, we spend a lot of time hearing that dogma. And it's stuck in there. I mean, it's like right up there with the low fat craze, right? Low fat, no fat, both of which I go into great detail in the book
and,
about.
And the clear your plate, because there's starving children in some
and God knows where, and they're not going to get that food anyways, right? But you know, I think that I actually encourage the reader to engage in a little weekend experiment with me as they're reading the book, where we play with listening to our hunger cues, as opposed to eating at, you know, prescribed times. And it's wonderful to give yourself the opportunity to just feel hunger. Like, okay, I'm starting to get hungry. What's most important there is that people have a plan. You know, so if you're starting to get into fasting, and I'm a big proponent of fasting in various ways for various reasons, but if you're just beginning to play with that idea, the most important thing about fasting is how you break the fast. So like you said, people are scared if they get too hungry that they'll make a bad decision. So before you even allow yourself to get close to hunger, you already know, oh, you know what? I've got those leftover pork chops in the refrigerator. I'm going to warm up some green beans to go with it. You know, like you already have a plan in your head of how you're going to break that fast. Because if you don't have the plan, then yes, you're going to just nibble on whatever comes across your way.
Yeah. You know, there have been times. Yeah. I remember when I was in high school trying to put on weight and I was eating all kinds of crap just for the calories, right. Just feed. And as a result, I was hungry all the time. And so the more I ate, the hungrier I got. Like I would go, I'll never forget this. My best friend, Rodney, his mother would make spaghetti for us. She was an Italian woman. It was wonderful. And we would go in and have that before football games on Fridays. So we'd go over to his house and we'd have a really big lunch, you know, late lunch. And I would eat like three plates of spaghetti. And on the way to the school, I would have him stop at Burger King and I would get a Whopper meal. And he'd be like, he's like, did you just eat spaghetti? I'm like, yeah, but and he's like, well, you should have asked. I already had three plates. You know, so I wasn't going to ask for a fourth. I wasn't going to ask for a fourth plate. And then I would eat that value meal. And then, yeah, I'd digest it and I'd play a football game and probably burn off a good bit of energy. But I was always hungry. I felt like I was always hungry. And even though I knew I was eating more than I possibly could ever burn, I was always hungry. I believe now looking back, some of the symptoms that I had back then, I probably had pre-diabetes as a kid.
Wow.
And of course, no, it's not going to be diagnosed, but the way I was eating and trying to put on weight, even though I didn't really put on a ton of weight, I believe now looking back, I probably had diabetes. And it wasn't until I got older and I, you know, stopped eating that way. Because when I went into the Army, it was impossible to eat that way. In fact, I would go out in the field and they would only give me 3,500 calories for the day. And I'd be starving. But then, you know, I'd lose a pound a day. And there was just a point when I'd stop being hungry. Mm. Like, oh, okay. So it wasn't the volume of food I was eating that was leading to whether I was hungry or not. It was just the fact that if I kept feeding myself, my body was going to keep telling me I was hungry. And it was just this weird.
And it was the quality of those calories too.
Yes, it was.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with a bowl of spaghetti from an amazing Italian cook. Like, I mean, who doesn't want that? But, you know, it's a mostly starch meal. And so there's not enough protein. There's not enough healthy fats. There's probably not enough fiber in the pasta. So, you know, it just sort of lights the candle for making you hungrier for more. You know, especially when you're a 16-year-old boy, you know.
Right. And then more was a Whopper meal, which again wasn't what my body was asking for really. I just heard more and I gave it more of basically the same. And so I think feeling hunger, getting comfortable with hunger, is a great way to understand food and understand what the food is doing to you or for you. Because it's the gauge that our body has that we're getting the nutrition that we need. Because if we're getting good nutrition, I tell people this because they're like, well, you know, I can't afford good cuts of beef, you know, grass-fed, grass-finished beef. And I'm like, well, if you buy a grass-fed, grass-finished beef, you're not going to eat as much. If you're eating good quality vegetables, you're actually from a volume, you're just not going to eat as much. I mean, if anyone's ever sat down and tried to eat 5 ounces of spinach, it doesn't sound like a lot, but it's hard if it's not cooked, because when it's cooked, it's partially digested, if you will. But if you get 5 ounces of raw spinach and try to eat it, that's hard. That's some work.
That's hard. Plus it's loaded with oxalate. I don't think I would really recommend that.
Well, right.
Understand your point, you know, and the reality is there's a lot of people who can't afford high level quality food. And it makes me very sad that it's cheaper to get a Happy Meal for your kid than it is to get them, you know, a hamburger. I mean, a grass-fed hamburger with, you know, corn on the cob and green meat. Like, that's not, you know, they're three times the price, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of families who don't have the ability to buy organic, let alone grass-fed, grass-finished, and all these things. And for those people, I say, buy the best you can. Buy the best you can and still avoid the processed foods. Because to your point, if you, you know, you spend the same amount of dollars on processed, nutritionally zero foods, and your family is still going to be hungry. Or you could buy protein and vegetables and let them get full.
Yeah. Okay, so let's take a step into movement. And in your book, you shared what you call the key elements of a movement practice. Could you kind of talk through those? Because I really like those.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's like five or six, so I'm just going to pull it up here just to make sure I hit all of them for you. But first and foremost, get your heart rate up, which, you know, a lot of people call it cardio. Really, it's just, we need to move, sometimes quickly, sometimes not so quickly. That's what humans do, right? Like hunters-gatherers. Mostly they're just roaming the ground and walking around a little bit, and then suddenly you got to chase something really fast to kill it, right? Like that, yeah. That's about it. So even people who have a stationary lifestyle, maybe they're stuck in a wheelchair. I have a gentleman who's stuck in a wheelchair, and we do intervals just moving his arms quickly. That's it. But boy, he's huffing and puffing by the time we finish those intervals, you know, once or twice a week. That's all he has to do. And that's helping to keep him in shape. So anybody can do that. Get and stay strong. You know, whether you're a 90-year-old woman who just wants to get out of a chair by yourself, or you're a 9-year-old kid who wants to run super fast, we all want to be stronger. We all want to be able to have good posture and hold it for long periods of time, which requires strong musculature and endurance. Keeping your balance. I think that a lot of people who are more focused on the aesthetics of getting in shape, whatever that means for them, we forget about balance. I can't tell you how many 30 and 40 year old people I've trained over the years who have horrific balance. I mean, just really bad. So, but you can get it back. You know, it's like, it's a use it or lose it proposition. So, you know, yeah. As people start to get older, just stand on one foot every once in a while you're brushing your teeth, you know, switch when you go to the lower teeth, whatever. But if you don't practice that balance, you're going to lose it. And that's why people end up shuffling as they get older. It's not so much that they've lost the strength in their legs to walk. They don't have any balance. They can't have one foot off the ground for half a second. So, you know, those are things we don't want to lose. We want to stay functional. Don't get too tight. You know, that doesn't necessarily mean stretching. You know, I'm rather hypermobile, so I don't do a lot of stretching. But I do have pieces of my body that get really tight, and I'll dig a ball in there or whatever. So, you know, there are areas of our bodies that we're more prone to injury because of the way we're aligned, that we need to be careful not to get too tight. You know, my husband has horrifically tight hamstrings, right? And if he doesn't keep working on them, then his lower back starts to become an issue, right? So whoever you are, there's some version of staying supple that's really important. And then the last thing I put in there, although it probably should be the first, is rest and recover. And, you know, as we're rushing around in our very busy lives and thinking that if I just do more of the same thing, I'm going to get in better shape, we forget to rest and let our muscles recover so that you can actually see the fruits of your labor.
Yeah. The way I like to look at it is the work phase, be that working on stamina, working on your strength, working on mobility or balance, you know, depending on how intense those are, you can do those fairly regularly. But every once in a while, even professional athletes take a deload where they let their body heal. And that's when the magic happens. So if you do a strength workout, that's not when you get stronger. You get stronger because your body, which is this wonderful, wonderful thing. I mean, imagine a machine that gets better as you use it. And it's that's how magical this is, that your muscles can get stronger if you stimulate them, feed them, and let them rest. You can build stamina if you stress your body, feed it, and let it rest.
It's amazing. And it's just not, it's a very undervalued piece of the equation when it comes to feeling better, resting your body. And the counter to that is, when you're actually doing the workout, whatever it is for you, you really want to push yourself to a level that is beyond your comfort zone and then put the rest in. That's where you really start to see results.
Yeah.
You know, you're doing 50, 60 repetitions. I mean, I'll never forget. I had a gentleman ask me, he'd been a client a long time ago. And then he called, he's like, you know, I'm just not really seeing results anymore. In my abs, you know, I'm doing like 300 crunches on the ball every morning. And I'm da-da-da-da, and I'm like, I'm going to stop you right there. You can do 300 of anything. You can do 50 of anything. It's not working for you. It's time for a new exercise. How about a plank? You know? So yeah, it's just, and then you do something every morning, it's not going to show you results anymore. Yeah.
I remember watching this woman. She would come in. There was a circuit with a series of machines. And every day I would go in at 2 o'clock to work out, and she would be there at 2 o'clock doing the circuit every day, 5 days a week. I don't know if she went on Saturdays and Sundays because I wasn't there on Saturdays or Sundays, but I would see her every single day of the week doing this circuit. It was the same circuit. I'm fairly certain she put the pen on the same number of plates on every machine that she went to as she had done from the first time she ever did this. And I'm like, I'm glad she's doing something, but she's not getting the benefit that she thinks she is. Because if she would go in, put one more plate on there, work a little harder on each of those, and then take the next day off, she'd come back even stronger.
Exactly right. Yeah. No, you hit the nail on the head. It's exactly, I've been in and out of gyms for decades, and you watch this happen over and over again. It's like, and the people look the same year after year after year.
Yeah. And you know, again, it's unfortunate they just don't know. They're doing something,
right.
and that's better than, I guess, doing nothing. But if the goal is to get stronger, you've got to actually do what the muscle needs to make it stronger. And that's exactly stimulation and feeding and rest.
Right. That's right.
Now, this next one, and this is important to me because it's this thing. And I guess I should say I'm fortunate because I don't have any pain. I wake up in the morning and I get out of bed and I feel good. I've had a good night's sleep. I get up. Yes, I walk in there, I pet my dogs first thing, and then I go and I start the coffee maker. And then I do a few chores around the house, and then I have some coffee. But I don't wake up with these aches and pains and all this stuff. Why is it that we believe, particularly after we reach a certain age, that pain is just this inevitable thing that happens to us that we just have to endure? Well, we're going to talk about it, but we're not going to, you know, we just think it's normal. We think hurting is normal.
Yeah, just the same way that we think that, you know, cognitive decline is normal part of aging too. Your body is telling you that there's something missing or something wrong. And, you know, sometimes those aches and pains are serious, but quite often it's disuse. It's muscle imbalance. It's or it's overdoing it, like we were just talking about. You know, that same person who in their 40s is hitting the gym in the same way over and over again, by the time they get to their 60s, they're going to start hurting because they're abusing their body in the same way every single day without that rest. So pain is not just pain. It's not just getting older. Pain is your body's very loud signal saying, you need to work on this. There is something wrong here. Help me. Not you know, put the aspirin cream on it, not take another Advil. What's wrong? You know?
Yeah. I mean, for me, again, yes, I do feel acute pain. So if I do something silly, I'm going to feel it. And sometimes I know I did something silly and that something silly is going to require some medical attention. That's happened. But it's just this, the chronic pain that people have just come to accept, you know, the I'm going to groan when I get up in the morning, getting out of bed. I, you know, I slept wrong. And it, that just, that whole concept is, fortunately, I'm going to say foreign to me. And I think it's because I do have good movement practices. I do tend to avoid foods that are going to cause inflammation. And I'm basically looking at being well, and being well includes having a happy and wonderful life. And I don't have a place for pain in there. Not on a consistent basis.
I'll be honest with you. I do wake up with aches and pains every single day of my life, whether it's my neck or my lower back or my hips. I've got all kinds of stuff going on. Now, what do I, it's not the same every day, but I'm closer to 50 than I am to 40. And yes, I wake up and I feel pain on occasion. So the question is, okay, well, what's going on? You know, did I sleep really bad? Was I on the computer too much yesterday? And is that why my neck is bothering me, right? Did I not stretch after I went for a run yesterday? Maybe that's why my back or my hips are hurting me, right? Have I had some wheat in my diet in the last couple of days that I wasn't aware of, and that's causing some joint inflammation? There's usually something going on there that I've done.
Yeah, wrong. And that's what I mean. Acute, and like you can really,
I need a course
if you
correct.
Think about it. Yeah, if you think about it, you can trace it back to, oh, I did this thing, and therefore. But again, I think a lot of people aren't aware that, and it becomes chronic because they're eating the same way all the time. They're moving the same way or not moving, worse.
Or not moving. And, you know, the other thing is a lot of my older clients think that those, like those osteoarthritis pains that they're having, and that's real. I mean, osteoarthritis is a normal, that is pattern of human life. Like, you know, as we get older, our joints do wear down. And it happens. But they think, well, it hurts to move, so I'm not going to move. The good thing about osteoarthritis is if you move, it actually starts to feel a little bit better. It may not go away completely, but our joints don't get nutrients by just pure circulation. We have to move those joints in order for the blood flow to get to them so that they get the nutrition that they need so they stay lubricated. And so, you know, just sometimes that's why sometimes getting out of bed is the hardest part. You know, it takes a few minutes to kind of get things warmed up. And so maybe you need a morning practice of a little Tai Chi or a walk around your block, you know, all of those things help reset the body, get the blood flow going, help wake the brain up, help you feel grounded, get your circadian rhythm working, you know?
Yeah. So Danielle, I define wellness as being the healthiest, fittest, and happiest you can be. What are three strategies or tactics to get and stay well?
One, get rid of anything that's any food in your current regimen that's not adding to your health. If you can't tell yourself why eating X food, besides you like it, is going to add to your goals and make you healthier, then you need to stop eating it immediately. That'd be number one. Number two, you need to move every day. You don't have to exercise, but you have to move your body, preferably from head to toe, if you can, every day for at least 10 minutes. And if you can do it outside, you get bonus points if you get a little extra vitamin D charge. And then the third thing I'd say is if you have nagging issues, test yourself to figure out what's going on. Start with your blood work from your doctor's office. Start there. And then start looking deeper. Do you have food sensitivities? Are your hormones dysregulated? Is your gut not working well? What is going on underneath that could be contributing to your lack of feeling great and feeling well? Because it's so much easier to do a little bit of investigative work and invest in some testing now than it is to spend decades paying for healthcare as we get older.
Okay, thank you. So Danielle, if someone wanted to learn more about you, more about the book, Own Your Wellness, where would you like for me to send them?
To my website, dfitlife.com. The book, Own Your Wellness, is available from me, but also from all book retailers, anywhere you want to go shopping, Target, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's out there. This has been great.
Well, good. You can go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/638, and I'll be sure to have the links there. Daniela, thank you so much for being a part of 40 Plus Fitness.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate it.
Welcome back, Rez.
Hey, Alan. There was a lot of really interesting information in Daniela's discussion with you on her book, Own Your Wellness. In fact, starting right there, having ownership over your wellness is pretty important.
Yeah, you know, a lot of things in life, I think people want given to them.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. But, you know, things that are given to you, you never really value, you know? Mm-hmm. And so when you start thinking about everything that's wonderful in your life, you probably had to work hard for it.
Oh yeah.
You know, there probably was a bit of pain, a bit of discomfort, probably got out of your comfort zone, maybe more than a little. Mm-hmm. But everything that we do that benefits us and is one of those kind of really good things in our life. We had to earn that.
For sure.
And people don't seem to want to earn it anymore. They want it handed to them. They want the easy button.
Oh yeah.
You know, and so you got to take this ownership. This it's got to start there. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of people, I get it. It's hard. You know, you're trying to break momentum and break inertia. You're stuck. Mm-hmm. You feel stuck. Mm-hmm. And you know, you don't feel motivated and you don't have what you need. So you know, go for the low-hanging fruit, hire a coach,
right.
Join mm-hmm. a group, do mm-hmm. something where you're going to be held accountable to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And that doing something allows you to step in and start owning things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's really hard to go in and own it on your own. But when you
for
have
sure.
a coach, when you have a group and you work on motivation at the accountability level, then you're doing the thing. And then mm-hmm. it's easier to start with self-efficacy. It's mm-hmm. harder to start with self-efficacy and work forward. I was fortunate enough to be able to do that at one point, but it was only mm-hmm. because I got to know myself well enough to know that I needed something big and scary in front of me or I wasn't going to do it. And that, you know, and mm-hmm. I signed up for a Tough Mudder, but, you know, not everybody can do that. Not everyone should do that. Mm-hmm. The easiest way to do it is to hire a coach.
For sure.
The next easiest is to join a group.
For sure.
And do the group stuff and have people around you that are mm-hmm. doing the things that you want to do. And you're much more likely to do those things.
Oh, absolutely. Like Daniela was explaining, you know, we are bombarded every day with all sorts of things in the news. And of course, across our social media feeds, you know, try this type of exercise or this type of diet, go vegan, go keto. You know, we are so bombarded with information that I can see how it can easily be confusing. And when you want to figure out what works,
you haven't even heard the new one. You haven't even heard this one. This one's blowing up on TikTok as we speak.
Oh no.
It's called Ozempic. To play off the Ozempic weight loss shot, mm-hmm. Which if you've got a lot of money, a doctor will give you a shot and you won't eat anything. You'll starve yourself to death. You can do that, but I wouldn't advise that either. But what Ozempic is basically it's a recipe where you take oats and lime juice and I think water,
mm-hmm.
And you blend it in a shaker, I mean mm-hmm. in a blender, and you drink it.
Mm. Wow.
And it's supposed to be this miracle weight loss thing.
There's always something, isn't there, though?
And so people are doing that. I mean, and it's not dangerous. This is not one of the more dangerous little meme things that's rolling around out there.
Mm-hmm.
But just if you want oatmeal, eat oatmeal. You know, you don't have to take oats, blend it. Just have a bowl of oatmeal. Don't add any sugar to it. Just have mm-hmm. a bowl of oatmeal. And go with that. And if you want a lime flavor oatmeal, then put lime juice in it, but
that sounds awful. It does. That sounds terrible.
It does. Well, you know, again, it's got to be hard. This is as hard as it gets, lime juice. I like lime juice, but you know, it's just, again, everybody's looking for the easy button. Mm-hmm. And so they see people blending oatmeal, lime flavored oatmeal in a blender and eating and drinking it. And yeah, you don't destroy the fiber by blending mm-hmm. it. You're probably getting some soluble fiber and, you know, that's going to make you feel full for a little while. But just eat oatmeal.
That sounds a lot more palatable than blended oatmeal. But even that was one of the things that Daniela had mentioned was she had mentioned towards the end, obesity is a disease of undernourishment, and undernourishment is the highlight here. Yeah. And I think blended oatmeal is not going to give you a whole lot of nourishing vitamins and minerals.
It has a little bit of fiber in it. It does have some fiber in it. So I'm not going to completely poo-poo the idea behind it. But it's obviously not a weight loss miracle.
But it's one meal, you know, it's your breakfast or whatever, you know, that's one meal, but you need all the other important nutrients, vitamins and minerals throughout the day. You can't just live on oatmeal.
And that wasn't the intent. The intent was that this would be a meal replacement shake, if you will. And it's not a lot of calories because I think it's a half a cup of oats or something. If I remember what I read right. But, you know, the reality of all of this is, look, your body needs nutrition. Mm-hmm. It's going to do the signaling of your hunger and everything else mm-hmm. based on what it needs. If you're not eating enough, your body's going to tell you to eat. It's going to tell you you're hungry. It's going to tell you mm-hmm. you're irritable. It's going to tell you you're in trouble. And it's not going to want to let go of fat because it doesn't feel safe. You're starving yourself.
Right.
But if you're getting some nutrition, then your body can start making better decisions mm-hmm. about how to use your hormones and potentially mm-hmm. cut some of that fat out. But if mm-hmm. it doesn't feel safe, it won't do that. It will spike your cortisol and it will do everything it can to hold on to that fat because it needs it in the case of an emergency. And mm-hmm. and you're telling it it's an emergency. if you give your body just a big whop of sugar and processed carbs with no mm-hmm. nutrition, then your body's going to initially think it's getting it. And then after it's over, it's going to turn around and say, well, I didn't get what I needed.
Absolutely.
Give me more. And you're going to be hungry. And then what's going to happen? You're going to get that hangry feeling and you'll be like, okay. And for the love of God, don't throw more of that crap after it because that's not the more it's asking for. It's not asking for a second Snickers bar.
No,
it's asking you to eat some real food.
That was the most fascinating part of her discussion of a Slurpee. Towards the end, she had discussed that having a Slurpee is probably the sweetest things that we've ever tasted, which I get that. I mean, it's completely manufactured to taste delicious and cold, but then we're hungry later, like we were discussing, because you're missing the nutrients that are supposed to be in that, you know, sweet tasting thing. So instead of getting a super sweet strawberry or raspberries or some other wonderful fruit, you get this fake sugar and it hits. It tastes good, but your body, like you were just saying, it's craving something else altogether.
Yeah. And so, you know, that's the whole point. You have to feed your body nutrition.
Yeah.
So make the choices that will feed your body. Mm-hmm. You're communicating to your body what's going on in the world around it. And if you're not feeding it, you're scaring it. And if you're scaring mm-hmm. it, it's not going to get rid of weight. You can't. There, physically, no way. Your hormones will not let it happen. Your cortisol will jump up. Your insulin will jump up. And you will not be able to lose weight no matter how mm-hmm. hard you try. And you're going to have those cravings and you're going to have all that stuff because your body says, I want more. But mm-hmm. it's not more Slurpee. It's
no
nutrition. Right. You know? So give your body what it needs and it will take care of you.
That's absolutely right. Perfect.
All right. Well, I'll talk to you next week.
Great. Take care, Alan.
You too.
Thank you. Okay, bye.
Bye. If you enjoy today's show, take a moment to subscribe so you don't miss the next one. And if you would, please leave us a rating and review on your podcast player of choice. Next time on the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast, we meet Rissa Grew and discuss her book, Food Frame. Diet is a four-letter word. Until then, have a happy and healthy week.